Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing. I'm excited to introduce my guest today, who is going to follow along with the theme of Family Week here. I've brought my brother on, who's been gardening on Long Island's temperate climate for almost 20 years. They've been in their house now. And he's learned lots of methods for being effective and efficient while, working full time. He's got a busy family. And so they've really developed some strategies that I think a lot of listeners are going to like today, who have, that also have like a busy life and are maybe feeling a little overwhelmed at the thought of a lot of gardening. So I think this will share some tips for listeners who are also, in the suburbs maybe, or I guess anywhere that you live. He's got lots of successful strategies for creating healthy compost, planting perennial beds that look beautiful, enhancing the landscapes, and even maybe some trials and tribulations from growing some trees. So I think you'll all like this show today. Thanks for listening. So welcome to the show today. I'm very excited to introduce my guest, my brother, Peter Ramos. So welcome to the show, Pete.
Okay. Hi.
And
glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you part of my little Family Week deal that we've got going here for June. So, and yesterday I interviewed a Peter. So yesterday was Alethea Facilis, who runs the Orchestae farm on Long Island at the planting fields. Her dad, whose name is Peter, came on. He has a farm out at Orion Point called Orion Organic Farms. And today we have my brother, Peter, who lives on Long Island and is here to share some really successful strategies for kind of reducing the workload and being more effective and efficient for growing a garden, especially if you have like a busy life like you guys do. So I guess we could start by talking about...
Well, all right. Do you want me to just... I guess I could start by just saying a little bit of... all right. So we live in a suburb that's about 30 miles. It's about a little over an hour outside New York City here on Long Island, which sounds like is the opposite where that other person you spoke to yesterday, they live way further out where it's much more rural almost on Long Island. So we are definitely like your classic suburb, and we live here in a house that's sort of part of a development area with our two daughters, my wife and I. And yeah, we've lived here for almost 20 years. So yeah, I guess we have a lot to say about, the all the things that we've gone through over the year and over the years. So
cool. Yeah. I think that's going to be, I think people are really going to like this. Keep going.
Yeah. And I guess people could also, if they wanted to, for a little bit more, information, that if they ever went, they could go back or, reference the conversation I did, because I think you interviewed, our mom, right?
Right. Mom's episode 10, Marie Ramos.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess maybe two perspectives on growing up on Long Island and different things and how, and I was definitely influenced by our parents in terms of growing up and the gardening. And both my wife and I, we definitely love gardening and the things we've done. So I guess if you wanted to get into one thing right off the bat is, yeah, you talk about different strategies. The other thing I guess I'd be most interested to talk about a little bit is how they influenced me to do a compost pile.
Cool. Okay.
So yeah, growing up they had that, we did that. And then when I first, one of the things we did, I'm not going to say we did it right away, but one of the things I did when we first moved in the first couple of years was I thought, okay, I'm going to do a compost pile just the way. And we found basically what we did was, we were lucky enough to have, a little area behind the garage that sort of was out of sight because we, again, it's one of those things where I guess everyone has to make those decisions. If they're doing a compost pile, where am I going to put it? So I guess a lot of people,
yeah,
it does
that
help.
That is an important thing to think about.
Right, because you want a bit, it's because it's not the super most attractive thing. So where am I going to put it? And don't have to worry about smell or anything or animals. So yeah, you want to take some thought into where you're going to put that. And so I was able to find this area sort of in the back that was up against that. It was easy because one side of it was up against the fence. And the first one was I just sort of went out and bought this crude little, like, 2 foot little border fence that you'd get maybe, and I put that in the ground. And basically, I carved out let's just say it was like somewhere between for like 4 by 8 area.
Oh, okay.
And so that
Wait,
was
so
the
wait, can
first,
I just ask a question? What's a
yeah.
border fence thing? Like, how tall is it? Like waist high or like knee high or?
No, we're talking like 2 feet, 3 feet, the kind of thing they'd maybe put around like the garden. And this one was like a little white picket fence. It's like wood
Oh.
slats with wire. Sometimes you see them in this and they're rolled up, and the kind of thing you just, again, like, I don't know how else to describe it. It's just like a little border fence.
Okay.
So that was the first go around. That lasted many years, and then we remodeled the house, and then some things happened, and sort of that, it got neglected. And I'll just say for several years, it was just sort of, there was like a, debris on top of it, and it sort of got away from us. So then last year, I was finally able to like determine to get it going again. And for that, the second go around, I basically just found some 2x4s, cut those up, and put those into the ground, and then use some chicken wire. So I think really, these are different solutions, different ways of attacking it. You could just, in theory, just create a mound like our mom. I think for like hers, I don't even really know if she does it anymore. For a while, she just had a mound of dirt and, just did it
She
that way and just
buries
had
it
an
now
area
because
carved
she's
out.
worried about the animals getting into it.
Yeah. Well, you kind of have to do that anyway. I mean, yeah. And there's different things you can do. I guess I've always been told that if you use some lime, that helps kill the smell. But we've actually never really had a problem with smell.
Yeah, we don't
Like,
have a
even in
problem with
like in
smell
the,
either.
if you
We get
turn it, I guess,
skunks.
and
We try we, our problem is skunks, like the eggshells.
yeah, I would think again, we're lucky enough that our fact, because we have a dog. So we have a fenced-in yard. So I guess that also helps. I mean, we live, people think, the suburb we live in, we actually do once in a while, we get critters that come in through sewers and stuff. Like we get raccoons and we get possums and squirrels. Obviously, then there's tons of like rabbits and squirrels. But I guess part of it is that we also have a cat and a dog. And for whatever reason, we've never really had a problem with too many pests getting in or problems with that. So, occasionally you get the squirrel who I guess attacks certain things. But anyway, so it is a decision you have to think about, like, where am I going to put it and how am I going to contain it? And, so these are different things. I always try and talk to people about, like, where are you going to put it? Like, do you want to try and maybe put it behind some shrubs, dig out an area that, like, look through your backyard and try and figure out where is a good spot that maybe it's going to be sort of like tucked away where, yeah, it's not the most attractive thing for people to look at. So anyway, so that's been, we were lucky and it's worked out really well that way. And then, and like I said, just in terms of like building it was really, I was lucky just to have some found things like that we had in the garage, and it was just easy to do. And now it's up and running again and we're really excited by it. So, and in
Do you
terms
want to
of,
share with listeners some of the things that you put in your compost? Like, if some
Yeah,
people
so
don't
I mean,
know,
pretty
I was
much
thinking
it's
about this the
pretty
other day.
basic. I mean, all our raw vegetable scraps that we do, like when our food prep, we're big, we do a lot of cooking. So, and I'd say we do it from anywhere, through the spring, through the summer, into the fall, and then they reach a point where we do sort of like go dormant for like the winter. So yes, like I said, so we'll do like vegetable, like eggshells, stuff like that.
Do you put coffee grounds in it?
Coffee grinds, yep.
What
Tea,
about?
tea bags.
Oh, really?
And then of course we try and do as much, like we do grass clippings. Obviously, the grass that's cut, we put in there. And then, we just do that throughout, like I said, that period. And then they'll reach a point in the, mid to late fall that once it gets really, I get to a point where I just want to then cover it with leaves and let it sort of sit through the winter. And then, then come the spring, you turn it over and, and then you've got it to use. And that's pretty much it. It's worked out pretty well. And basically, one of the things we use it most for is because, again, as we'll maybe start talking about, is really the thing that we do the most planting nowadays is we have a lot of planters on our deck. So my wife takes advantage of it, and we use the dirt that way. We think that we've had some successful, really nice flower pots and whatnot, so it seemingly has proven really useful, the dirt that way. So
So wait, so are you saying that you're filling the whole planter with the compost that's turned into dirt already? Or you like mix the compost in with dirt?
no, it's it well, by that time, that's the point. Like by the following
By that
year,
spring, you're
it's
getting
it
cool.
yeah it's a, it's all become dirt. Like it's mostly dirt through most of the year. Like it really breaks down pretty quickly. Like there's some things obviously like we've discovered, and probably some of your listeners who've done a lot of composting know that some things obviously break down. They take much longer to break down. Like avocado skins, especially also corn husks. They take much longer to break down than you just have to, those things, but a lot, most of it breaks down pretty quickly.
Do you chop up like the corn husks smaller? Will that help them break down more?
I don't really do that. I do smash up like things like pumpkins, watermelon rinds, other bigger things that, yeah, I'll use a shovel and really try and break it down and like create a mush. And so that just does break, you want to break down sooner than later. So melon rinds, all that stuff. You just try and break it down with a
I think this
shovel,
is great.
whatever tool.
Nobody's really talked about this before, like the specifics of what to put in your compost pile. And I think it's a nice thing that you're talking about it in a more crowded area out that you're doing that right there. Like you're not out in the country and you're doing this right in the crowded suburb.
Yeah. And again, it's not one of these, it is one of these things where you have to spend, I guess, again, I don't want to claim I'm any kind of expert, just I've found that by doing what I've done, has worked. So I've just gone like common sense and experience that you do, you have to tend to it. There's two things you kind of do have to do regularly, especially with grass clippings. You do have to regularly turn it like every few days because otherwise it just clumps up and gets, so you do have to turn it and
Wait,
really.
but turning it's
So
like it takes like what, 2 minutes? I mean, it's not a big project.
it depends again how it all depends on how much grass you're putting in. Like it takes a little bit more. It takes like some time, and even if you turn it a little bit, like some days, and you have to maybe go back out and just re. You definitely have to do it at least probably once or twice a week, to really, if you want that to break down sooner than later. If you really want the grass clipping and stuff to break down, you. And I'm not talking about really digging deep, but you have to do like a couple of inches. You're moving the dirt around, moving the grass, like shaking it up, like, and that's why I use like a four, I guess you'd call it a cultivator. It's like a four-pronged, like garden tool that has like those, like, I guess I'm trying to think, I feel so silly like not even be able to describe it. It's like the four like sharp pointy,
It's like a pitchfork.
Right, but it's a curved. It's got that curve. It's like a hoe almost, but it's got these four prongs. And that's the thing I use most of all. I don't use a pitchfork. Originally, I think for years, like I thought, oh, I gotta get in there and use a pitchfork. And I really realized after, like, I'm like, this just does not work. And this other thing is much more efficient. Like the pitchfork, like, yeah, I guess you could use a pitchfork, but I've just found that this cultivator really breaks up the grass, breaks up the dirt just really, really well. It moves the dirt well. You're just moving it from one side to the other, sort of back and forth. Anyway, so, and then That's one thing you got to do. That's like one maintenance thing that you kind of have to do semi-regularly. If you want, again, if you want to get the most out of it, if you want it to break down, because, and then the other thing is does need water. You do have to, I feel like it needs moisture to break down. If you let it dry out, then again, you're just like sort of wasting, it's not going to become really useful dirt. It's just going to dry out and become like kind of just dirt dirt. Whereas you want it to be really rich, I guess nutrient rich, whatever. You want to get the keep the bugs in there. I love it. When as the year goes on, like you see more and more earthworms. As I go out there now, all of a sudden I'm seeing every time I move the dirt around, I see, oh wow, there's a lot more earthworms. And so they need the moisture. So those are the things you kind of have to do.
Sure.
But again, it doesn't take a ton of time. And it's the kind of thing that, again, if you're, it's the kind of thing where you're going out, when you put your food scraps in there, all right, I take a few minutes and that's the time I do it. So like, I'll sometimes just put food scraps. I won't do it. It depends on how you do it. I'll put some food scraps in every few days, and that's when I try. I'm like, all right, I'll take some time here just to move the dirt around. So it kind of accomplishes it, that way. But anyway, so
I
that's
still don't
sort
think
of
it
my
takes more
story
than
on.
like 5 minutes
Yeah,
to
again,
flip
it
the
all depends
pile.
on how much time and how big your pile is. Like, again, I just said, like, oh, mine's about, the new one is about, I guess it's a 4x8 area. It's like 32 square feet, I guess. So, there's a bit there. So, and again, and you can divide it up and you can do certain more on some points, and you can do half one day, half another, or half one week and half another. So, different ways of approaching it. So, but the great thing is then you've got this great, in the end, a little, it does just a little bit of work, creates this great amount of dirt, and then also you just, I guess, whatever the philosophy that you're, it's just one more thing that you're not throwing out, and it's sort of, adding to your garden, and you've got all this great dirt. So,
Yeah, well, I think that's a huge part of organic gardening is building up your soil and creating good dirt using compost, and it just improves everything. So it's giving back to the environment at the same time. Cool. All right, so do you want to talk a little bit about your perennials, or did you even ever get to the part about what herbs you grow? Go back to what herbs you grow.
So really, at this point, we've gotten down to like, or really, maybe we should, all right, so talk about like our strategies, and what we've kind of worked over the years is to be a little bit more like, I guess, classified as like a lower maintenance garden. We have a pretty big amount of gardening space, a lot of beds. We have beds in the front and the
You do have
back.
a big yard
Yeah.
and a big garden.
And, but, again, it's one of those things where it's proved at times unmanageable. So we've said, all right, we're going to cut back a little. So in terms of like herbs, we've really gotten it down to mint, basil, and that's kind of it, I guess. Like, we have some organic, I mean, some ornamental oregano growing. But we do different types of mint. But I've done like, over the years, I've done every kind of herb there is. Those are the ones I've found that just are easiest and we enjoy. I mean, basil for us is just sort of like a staple because then we love, using it throughout the summer for different things. And mint, I've just felt is just such a great thing to have to put in different drinks.
All right, wait. I was going to ask you about the mint. What kind of mint? For some reason, I think mint, the first thing I think of is catnip, because that's the mint that always ends up growing at my house. But, that's
Well,
probably
yeah,
not what you're
sure.
talking about, is it?
No. I mean, I guess there's just generic mint, and then there's different types. We have
Does it taste like
spearmint. We have,
peppermint? Spearmint.
well, there is peppermint. You can get peppermint, and there's spearmint. We have this one called chocolate mint. There's like I said, there's like a sort of, I guess you could call it
Chocolate
generic
mint.
mint. What was one of the other mints we had? I'm trying to remember. But those, like I said, you go to the whatever the nursery or whatever, and you can find all these different types of mint. And it's pretty hardy. In fact, if anything, in the past we've had trouble controlling it. Like it can grow really,
Yeah,
because
that's
it's kind
probably
of,
catnip. It grows on you.
it just grows crazy. It starts growing like into the grass and whatnot, and it can be hard to control. It's like anything else. You just gotta pay attention to it and sort of like,
Yeah, my
maintain control
oregano
it a
just
little bit.
totally
But
overrun my yard. It's
yeah, I
absolutely
mean, still,
gone.
it's worth having. I just those are the things I love having. And I guess
What's your favorite
I
drink to
used to
put
have
mint
a
in?
just different like either cocktails or it's good with rum. It's good with like lemonade and iced tea, all these different things. So it's just good to have. It's a nice refreshing. And again, I don't cook with it a lot, but you could. You can use it. There's a lot of recipes, a lot of lamb and meat recipes that are good with fresh mint. A lot of Middle Eastern things, I guess, that you can grind it up and put it in and use it as a marinade. So, but anyway, let's get back to maybe some of the other then, in terms of, things that we've. So, you could still have a great garden without, again, we've sort of gotten away from the vegetables. We used to do some vegetable gardens, and we just found that, like, by the end of the summer, A, we didn't want to go out and weed it, and they just would, a lot of times, just fall into disrepair. So now we've just worked hard on just trying to make the garden. Again, have a lot of variety, have a lot of color, a lot of, different things, but make it so it's a little less maintenance, with our busy lives on them, because we love the garden and everything, but it's just one of those things where,
Can I ask a question?
yeah.
So, since your wife Michelle is the one who introduced me to Alethea and Aaron at the
Yeah.
CSA that you guys are going to at the planning fields, like coincidentally,
Yeah.
I was listening to a podcast last night by these guys that have the Chicken Thistle Coop Cast, which is a great podcast. If you're looking for another gardening podcast, you got to check those guys out. They're so fun. What they were talking about, some of the things, when you should, they had a great episode on when you should know if you should join a CSA or if you shouldn't. Like, I would not actually be a good candidate to be a customer of a CSA because I'm like all about flexibility and being the mobile person that I am. You never know where I'm going to be on any given day. And they said that part of being belonging to a CSA that was important was being prepared for regular pickups. And they talked about other things, but that was the thing that stuck out to me. They talked about, being open-minded to flexible, different foods, which I would be good with, and some other things. So how does Michelle like, how do you guys like belonging to the CSA? And do you think that because of the availability of freshly grown organic food is a little bit easier for you guys? That's kind of leading to your decision also, like to not have your own vegetable garden because going to that CSA to the Acesti farm is helping.
I don't know. I probably am not the best person to answer this question. Like, I don't know. First, I guess you should maybe for those like myself and the other listeners, like, so what is a CSA again?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that's my fault. No. A CSA is a consumer supported agriculture. I'm not sure. Community supported agriculture. Community
Okay,
supported
right.
agriculture. And what it is a farm will have like maybe 100 shares that they're gonna grow food for maybe 6 months. And so what the community does is they all pay like, I don't know, some amount of
Right,
money
a
for each
fee, yeah,
share. Yeah, you
right.
pay
A
a
membership
fee,
fee,
a
yeah.
membership fee, and you pay for the whole 6 months all at once. And then you go, I think, usually once a week, and you pick up your allotment of vegetables that they've
Right.
grown. And what it does is it allows the farmer to buy their seeds and, get their run their tractor and, pay labor if they need to, depending on, if it's a small farm or if it's a a big, large operation, like,
Right.
and so
Yeah, I
does that
don't. All right.
explain
So,
it?
right. So, to answer your question a little bit, like, I don't think it influenced us one way or the other in terms of like how like growing our own vegetables. I think it was just like that. My wife went. We are members of this garden, this arboretum, and one of the many things they do. They're very family oriented, very event oriented. To it's a state park here on Long Island, and so they had a space available in the park, and they wanted to create the CSA. So they, I guess, are leasing it out to this, I guess you could say whatever they are, private or nonprofit,
They're a
nonprofit
nonprofit. They're
group.
501c3.
Right. I guess you're right, because you've already interviewed them on one of your other. So, she just found it a really fascinating idea, my wife, and I guess she's just excited to be participating in to, in it. And she, again, it's one of these things where I guess, we're contributing to another part of the park that we're contributing to. And yeah, we get this great benefit of these fresh vegetables. So I guess, if you're the type of person that wants to do a big garden and your own gardening, yeah, I don't know if it makes sense for you. But if, again, sort of the, if you're some people who live in the suburbs and your life is busy and you want some fresher and better, more organic vegetables, that then I think it makes sense, and it's great and it's fun, and it's a nice thing to do. We've
There's a
certainly
lot of
enjoyed it
people
last
here in
summer.
Eureka that belong to CSAs.
Yeah.
And like I
So.
interviewed like Todd and Rebecca that had two bear, they have two bear farm. They moved to Whitefish, but they lived right on Terrio Creek next to us for 5 or 6 years, and they have a they still have people from Eureka. They still come up here
Right.
once a week, I think, and
So,
bring to their CSA share people up here. And then there's also that Bountiful Baskets that I'm always hearing about, and I know several people that are very happy with Bountiful Baskets. But Alethea and Aaron, they were some of my favorite. They're fun. If you haven't listened to that episode, you should check it out because they're just super fun. And then Alethea's dad was on yesterday. Anyway, but yeah, so, all right, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. So you were going to talk about some of the cool things that you're doing because of your busy life to make your garden enjoyable without a lot of work.
Right, and so it was a move towards more and more perennials, and
Okay, so just quickly, I always like to tell if it's somebody's listening for the first time. So a perennial is a flower or something that's going to come back every year on its own, and you don't have to replant.
right,
Whereas an annual is something you have to
exactly,
plant the seeds every single year and start from scratch, like snapdragons or zinnias or annuals. But give
right,
us some examples of some perennials. Because actually, I had
well,
another
right.
guest who just moved somewhere, and she moved into a house that has a perennial garden. So Shelley Clark, if you're listening, you might learn something about your new perennials. I know you're going to love.
Well, I mean, again, so just perennials are just great. Like, for instance, one of the perennials that I've particularly love is irises. I've created a little iris bed. I love them, and they produce beautiful flowers. And they're seemingly pretty hardy. And again, they're so-called, well, I guess, propagated in theory, and they'll spread and whatnot. Although I've had some trouble with that, but
Okay, I can tell you a couple of
overall.
things there. So we have lots of irises, and what he means by they spread is what you do is in the fall, you kind of cut the tops off, and then you dig down, and they're like tubers or like a bulb, and you
Yeah.
break those apart and spread them out.
Right.
And then you can plant them in different places. But they're usually pretty prolific irises, and they're very hardy. They grow here really well.
Yeah.
And they,
Yeah, so
yeah.
they're a great perennial, and I've really and they're just, yeah, they're great.
Yeah. And
In
they're
terms
like
of
one of the first things to bloom in the spring here.
right, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Cool. Good answer. What else?
In terms of other, I'm trying to go, and then we've done a lot of like hostas, and they're great
What's a
because they're
hosta?
pretty
I don't
very
know what those
hardy.
are.
What is a
Do you
hosta?
know?
I don't know. Again, I'm not an expert on what it is. It's just it's a particular plant that They come in different colors, and some are big leaves, some are smaller leaves. But again, like irises, you can split them and then transfer them, and then they will spread like crazy. And they're usually, again, they're one of these other really hardy plants that, that just grows well, and they just can fill
How
up a,
big
they
are
can
they?
fill up. Well, they're different sizes. Like I said, some produce like a leaf that's really like quite large. Again, they're low, sort
Like
of,
bigger than the
they
palm of your
sit.
hand?
Oh, yeah, they're big. And some of them are big leaves.
Do they bloom? Is there a
And
flower?
what's that?
Is there a flower that blooms?
There a flower? I think there might be a flower that eventually blooms from the beginning, but mostly it's just this big, sort of low. You don't want to call it, it's not a shrub, it's more of a plant. It's a plant,
Or a bush.
So, no, it's a plant.
Okay.
So, but they're great. That's one of the things we use a lot of. Then my wife does a lot of this is where I guess she would be better if she was answering these questions. She does a lot of other different types of like cone flowers and different sort of, I don't know, they're not really wildflowers, but different
Coneflowers, echinacea is actually an herb, right?
what's the other thing she does? Snowballs or whatever, hydrangeas. What's the other one? I'm forgetting the name of it.
All right.
But anyway, so we've moved towards a lot of that stuff. I'd say the only annuals, then the pots that we grow on the deck and whatnot, or in front of the house, those she does put some annuals in. She'll usually,
Okay.
because the kids and whatnot, they have a lot of school sales for flats of annuals. So she'll, her way of supporting the school or the PTA or some other organizations, she'll buy flats from them. So every year she'll do the annuals that way. And it just gives the deck some other colors. But, to get back to some of the other things we do, like grasses, we do ornamental herbs, daylilies, all sorts of things to add some color, add some variety to the garden and make it a just a little more manageable. I don't know.
Cool. Do you put like wood chips or anything around for like a decorative border like that way and anything?
Not really. A lot of people do. I find that a lot of people are like, think they'll buy mulch or will do wood chips, and they do, and they're thinking that, oh, it's going to prevent weeds, and it might do that a little, but eventually weeds grow in that stuff and still has to be maintained. So if you're, I've always sort of been against that, like mulching, and I feel like you still, no matter what, you still have to weed your beds at some point. Again, if you filled it up with some of these plants, that hopefully it gives less chance for weeds to grow. But that's why I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of that stuff, because I think it's like putting a Band-Aid on. It might look good for a little while, but eventually you still have to maintain. You still, it's not going to eliminate the weeds.
No, but
So,
it does help if you're growing like a food crop, to reduce the weeds there because it's a shorter period of time, I think.
Yeah, I've never thought about
Than
that
growing
way. I
just,
guess so.
and it kind of
Yeah.
like blocks out the light, I think, a little bit too. If it can like block out
Maybe.
the light, they're not going to grow as much. But and it also holds the moisture in. But
Okay.
yep, I could see I could definitely see it coming up through the wood chips. After a
Yeah.
while, for sure. What was I just going to ask you? All right. Well, did you want to talk about trees at all?
Yeah, just I guess quickly, I've just always been, I love trees. I think it's really important, like to have trees, on the property. Like we've over the years, for every tree we've taken down, it's not something like I live by, like, oh, I take a tree down, I got to put a tree in, but it just sort of has worked out that way. So I've always been it's been important to me to always like have them around. I love different varieties of trees. Like, we've tried over the years, like, lots of different types. It's always been sort of disappointing when a tree doesn't make it. Like, and so we've had some different ones, like fruit trees, non-fruit trees, that just for whatever reason, like, they haven't made it, and they've either been scarred by something, or they didn't last through a winter, or disease. So we've gone through some,
Do you want to tell
disappointments
listeners
with
like
different
what the
trees.
temperature's like in New York in case they don't know?
Wait, say that again?
Just to kind of like what are your winters like? What's your temperature like in case they don't know? Or like what kind of climate you have?
Well, it's classic Northeast winters. We have pretty hard winters. I guess not as much as, northern
No
climes,
way.
but
I think New York is way colder than Montana. When I'm
I
there, you
guess.
guys get that cold wind, wet
Yeah, I
wind.
mean, we get really, with the least, certainly the last almost decade, we've had really wet winters, a lot of snow. So every winter, you're always like, what's going to make it? What's not going to make it? In one respect, the moisture in the snow has been good because it gives the garden the moisture, but at the same time, the cold temps and whatever, and the, like you're saying, the harshness of it can definitely do some damage. So sometimes I think that adds to, what's going to survive, what's not. But so anyway, just it's one of those things where I've tried to put in a lot of trees. We've had to take out a lot of trees for different reasons, because they've gotten old and they were dying, or like I said, some disease. So, but then we've just been, it's been, in some ways, and again, that's the fun, is then trying to put in some new ones of different types.
What's your favorite tree
So
that's in your yard right now?
I have, there's lots of favorites. Like, I guess one of the things I've also been proud of is that we've grown, we actually then drew some shrubs and we shaped them like trees. So that's one of my favorites, is we have
What kind of
actually,
shrubs? How do you shape a tree, a shrub like a tree? Like you cut the bottom, kind of prune it?
yeah, you have to just really prune it so that, like, you try and, because lots of shoots will happen, the shoots will turn into like branches, and they all shoot up from that sort of a central area. And so what you try and do is you, like, is it one's a dogwood shrub that we've shaped like a dogwood tree. So just, you take one of the stems, you just sort of let it really pick one that grows and grows, and then you sort of cut all the others around it, and so that grows more like a tree. And you just keep cutting back and cutting back all the other,
Shoot.
shoots. Yeah. So one sort of went exciting in the sense that it was sort of a inv it was cl it's been classified as an invasive tree plant, but it still has such a great tree. We love it. It's called an autumn olive tree, and it has a great leaf and everything.
What do you
And
love about it? Like, why do you
I don't
say that?
know. It just it's a very it produ for one, it produces an absolutely gorgeous flower in the spring, and like when it
Okay.
blooms, the bees, and that's one great thing. It gives the bees a ton of nectar or whatever, and they're buzz throughout, they're like crazy. So that's one thing I love about it. And again, it's important. I think people who probably listen to your show know the importance of bees and everything. And so it's one way that we're making sure in our little neck of the woods that they have a lot of pollen to get. So that's one thing.
Do you have water? Like a water thing in your yard at all? Like for birds or bees at all?
No, not like a specific water thing, no.
Do you get a lot of birds? Do you feed the birds?
We feed the birds in the wintertime. We don't feed them in the spring and the summer, because we have a deck, and we kind of want to just keep the deck a little cleaner. So we notice that, like, if the birds, if too many birds, we notice through the winter, it's not a problem, but if we fed them all year round, it might be a bit of a thing for them. So there seems to be plenty of, they don't have a problem with, and then in the summer there seems like there's
What do you feed your
berries and
birds?
whatnot. I don't know, just generic seed that we get at the hardware store. So, yeah, we try to keep them going in the winter, and it's fun to have them come and eat in the winter.
What kind of birds do you get?
Mostly, some generic things like sparrows and chickadees, and it's fun to see what different. We did get a few interesting woodpeckers and juncos, finches. That's it. And then it's fun to see the occasional passing by the ones that migrate, like warblers and trying to think of some of the other more like really exciting birds we've gotten.
Do you remember going to Hawk Mountain when we were kids?
Sure.
Have you taken your kids
No.
there?
No.
I interviewed this woman about bird feeders the other day, Judy Hysack, and they actually are right near Hawk Mountain, so we talked about that trip to Hawk Mountain.
Oh,
Yeah, she's been there a bunch. She said she went there in the fall and was like some amazing migration, and like 10,000 birds flew over in one day and one
yeah.
count. It was
Well,
crazy.
yeah. But I don't know, so I guess just I guess it's one of those things where I feel like, everyone can have, like, sometimes even if they feel like they don't have the time or something, that and they live in the suburbs and or anywhere, I guess, that just if you just put a little bit of effort and just start planning and thinking your gardening out, like, you can just have a really great variety of plants and things. And you definitely always have to put some work into it, but you can work it so that perhaps you shape it in a way, and the things you buy and the things you put in just requires a little less work than, it all depends on how you want to, spend your time. But if you can just have a really nice garden with a lot of plants and flowers and trees, and work it so that you can still enjoy it, but perhaps not have to spend as much time doing it. So we've just had a lot of happiness and success that way, and just shaping it over the years to be a little easier.
Cool. Are you ready for my final question?
Okay, sure.
If there was one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be?
All right. Well, I guess just in our experience in our region is that communities, it would be great to see communities replace, make sure that they're replacing the old trees that either are cut down for, trees either die of old age, or sometimes they're just, destroyed by storms, which we do get in this area, or just for some times it's like, for instance, in our neighborhood, like when they put the sewers in, it destroyed a lot of the roots to the big trees. And mostly, I'm talking about, like, your bigger, your older growth trees or whatever. I guess your maple trees, your oak trees, trees that, are really your classic big shade trees that, are the ones that convert the, the CO2 into oxygen, that they're the ones that are really the most important. And our neighborhood has a lot of those, but the areas, they're now into their 60s and 70s, some of these trees. And again, the most more and more of them are dying and being cut down for different reasons, like I said, either old age or disease or storms or all these different reasons. And I just would love to see more of the community or other communities make sure that they replace them with the same types of trees. A lot of times they're replaced with smaller fruit trees, not flowering fruit trees or smaller trees, which it's great that they are being replaced with something, but I think it's important to make sure that they're replaced with the bigger trees. I think it's just so important that they continue to provide it's the shade and all the benefits that you get from a larger tree. Now, having said that, I haven't had a chance to do that myself. I wish I had planned ahead and done some more of that, but like I said, we have put in a lot of smaller trees, which some of which have gotten big, but again, I just sort of it's a community thing. I wish the community would very often, especially there's this one road by us where they had to chop down to the sidewalks, they chopped down all these beautiful maple trees and oak trees, and it's just really so sad to see. And And I just think it's a shame. I think a lot of times there's just a lot of fear because of storms and whatnot that communities and people, they take these trees down and they don't realize the effect that it's having on communities, that we're losing these big trees that are just so important. So that's really one of the things that,
Excellent. I like it. Cool. Okay, how about an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
I guess I would just say, just to, I for those that haven't done it, I think you'd find that if you do try it, like how great it feels to, to just get your hands dirty and to do this stuff. It just feels so great. And then you have, like, from this, once you do it, through watching it grow and then the whole season, it's just such an awesome feeling. It's just to do it, see the process, and that's it, I guess. I've just always found it to be so inspirational, and
Well, thank you so much for spending Father's Day with me. We had a great Father's Day together last year in New York at the beach, at Jones Beach. Wait, did we go to Fire Island?
I think we went to far. I can't remember.
I think we went to Fire
I
Island
can't
too.
remember.
And have a great day today over at Mom's in her lovely yard. I miss you guys.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Great talk.
Okay, I shut the recording off. Hi, listeners. Some of you may have noticed I changed my name in the introduction because I made a Facebook page where you can connect with me. So just go to Jackie Marie Beyer, and Beyer is spelled Beyer, even though it's pronounced like I'm going to the store to buy something. It's Beyer. And say hi. I'd love to get to know you and connect with other gardeners. I'm thinking about creating some kind of organic gardener podcast community. So if you have any suggestions for that, but I'd just love to reach out to some of you listeners in a little more friendly fashion. You all know I love Facebook and anything on my smartphone. Also, if you or someone you know is an organic gardener with a journey to share on the show, please let me know or introduce me. I'm always looking for new guests to interview. I think I've counted, I've had guests from about 16 states, including like Florida, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Washington, Oregon, Arizona, New Mexico, California, Texas, Wisconsin, New York, and of course, lots of people from Montana. Quite a few other states. I think there's 16 total, plus some international guests. We have people from Canada and Australia on already. But I would love to reach out. So we have somebody from all 50 states, some different countries. So you're always surprised at what you have to share. I know lots of my listeners have been a little hesitant and then they got on here. It's tons of fun. I always find myself laughing a lot. And so if you know of anybody who'd like to be a guest, or if you just want to connect with me on Facebook, I'd love to, meet you so, and connect on there. So, just wanted to let you know that's what that's about. Thanks. Hope you enjoy.